There we go. Okay, this is Chris Haas with Queer Wisconsin 2012. It is June 12th, 2012. I'm at Orchard Ridge United Church Christ at Madison, Wisconsin, and I am interviewing Winton Boyd. Winton, you're senior pastor? Is that what's your title?
Yes.
So with Winton, who is the senior pastor here, I appreciate you helping me out today. I'm going to turn this here so we make sure we get everything we're supposed to. Okay, so can I ask you, like, maybe just about, like, your date of birth and your growing up, your childhood type stuff?
Yes. I was born January 3rd, 1959 in Minneapolis, a suburb of Minneapolis. One of eight children.
Oh.
And three of my siblings are, well, one is a gay man and two are lesbian women.
Oh, cool.
Which is part of what has informed my interest and involvement for many, many years. I have lived in, is this loud enough?
Let's check. Yeah, it should be.
Lived in Wisconsin for 13 years. Prior to that, lived in California, Fresno, California for 7 years, and for about 10 years after college in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. where I met my wife. And we have three children who are all in their 20s. And all born in Minneapolis, and but really call Madison home now because they grew up here.
Very cool. So you grew up in Minneapolis. You were there your whole life.
I spent my childhood in Minneapolis. I went to college in Vermont at the University of Vermont, and then returned to Minneapolis after college, where that's when I met my wife and. We spent a total of about 10 years before we moved out to California.
Yeah. Gotcha. When did you ever realize that any of your siblings were different, I guess, different sexual orientation than yourself, or?
When I was in college in Vermont, which was from 77 to 81, I had a couple of friends who told me they were gay, and at that point, it was quite unusual, I guess I would say. I was also pretty involved in a kind of a faith-based student organization, and they were sort of related to that. So within that Christian organization, it was even more unusual. And it was a little bit after that, right before I got married in 1983, that my older brother told our family that he was gay, told us in one-on-one or face-to-face conversations over the course of about a year when he was with us, had lived in Colorado and then had moved to California. And so that was really the first person close to me. Shortly thereafter, excuse me, my wife and I were working at a church in Minneapolis, and we're in conversation with a man who owned a home, also on staff, was a large church. And we had talked about living in community in various ways. And so the three of us started talking about living together. And he told us before we moved in, he thought it was important that we knew that he was gay. Mm-hmm. At that point in his life, he had chosen to not only not reveal that to very many people, but had actually chosen to try and deny that and live at one of these, was a part of one of these organizations or efforts to try and, if not change people back to being, or not back, but to being straight, to at least control their same-sex orientation. And probably the most pivotal part of that story is that effort failed miserably for him. And in ways that probably I'm not comfortable talking about, mm-hmm. but we saw the convergence of a person who literally got up every morning at like 4 a.m. to pray that he could be straight, with a life that just completely imploded because he was living something he wasn't.
Yeah.
And I don't know how well we articulated all of our thoughts at the time, but we realized at that point that the insanity of trying to deny one's orientation and the pain, really, of that. And I think, and that was probably around 85, 86, and 1985, 86. And I think from that point on, it became really clear to Tammy and me that we were not going to be a part of anything that tried to deny people the possibility of living as they were born,
uh-huh.
or as they felt as their body just sort of directed them. So, and in fact, one of our children has a middle name after this person, partly because of the bond that we created in the aftermath. And he would say to this day that Tammy's welcome of him after telling the story of what, how he had gotten himself, how he imploded,
mm-hmm.
Was literally a life-saving moment when she just received him without judgment and with compassion. And we subsequently moved to California, and not far from where this brother, older brother, lived. And in that period of our family's life, another sister, somewhere 95, something like that, 94, told us that her family, that she was, had fallen in love with a woman. And that sent all kinds of ripples through my extended, or not my extended, my biological family,
uh-huh.
some of which wonderful and some of which were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that experience crystallized for me as a pastor that I could not serve a church that my siblings wouldn't be welcome. And if they weren't currently welcome, I couldn't serve a church that wasn't at least moving in that direction. And so, and I had a colleague in California who had a similar dynamic in that he had a daughter who was lesbian. And we knew of a lot of people in the church who had family members
mm-hmm.
who were, or loved ones who were gay or lesbian. And so that church in the time that we were both there did become what the UCC calls open and affirming. And when I went in the late 90s to, when we were thinking about moving back to the Midwest, I only looked for churches that were already open and affirming because I knew that I couldn't go back.
Right.
And I couldn't represent a community that, again, would not welcome people who, for all in all other ways, would have loved to be a part of a community just because of their orientation. And so that gets us to Madison. We can talk about Orchard Ridge.
Yeah.
I don't know if you have other...
Yeah. I guess one thing I was going to ask, where are you in the 8 children? What number are you?
I'm number 4.
Ooh.
Yeah. And somewhere in the period in the late 90s, a third sibling, a sister, told our family that she was lesbian, but she also chose for a while to live in part of a church community that really supported her in the belief that that was not appropriate or not godly to live that way. And so she actually spoke at various campus events, and she was doing graduate school, you know, about her ability to resist the urges or whatever. She was across the country, so I don't know all the details of that, but she subsequently moved away from that stance, and a little bit after we moved to Madison, she and a partner moved here as well. And since that point has been very much, very active as a out lesbian woman.
Very cool.
So, really interesting, a brother who identified as gay, a sister who said for a long time she did not call herself lesbian, she just said, I fell in love with a woman.
Uh-huh.
And then a sister who understood herself as lesbian but didn't want to live that lifestyle, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
and then did. So there was a period of about 10 years of a lot of soul searching within my siblings, and some of it was wonderful and some of it was stuff I wouldn't want us to go through again. It was
absolutely
ugly. Yeah.
Hard. Were you guys a real a strong church family when you guys were young?
We were as a family we all attended church. I think as we became young adults, I wouldn't say my parents were overly religious or faithful. They were part of their, I think, their civic duty to
mm-hmm.
take their kids to church. And as young adults, we had different ways of engaging in spirituality, from
mm-hmm.
No involvement to quite conservative Christian. One sister converted to Catholicism. And that was very much part of the dynamic of our internal conversation, is how our faith did or did not shape what we thought.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I think of the eight, I was for a while, not today, but for a while, the only practicing Christian who wasn't judgmental, which
mm-hmm.
was a hard place to be.
I can imagine.
Because I didn't like the judgment on my siblings, but also hard because I didn't like that characterization of Christianity.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and to see it in your family when you so believe it yourself, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that completely. So, you came to Madison. What was the church like when you got here, or what drew you to it, or, you know?
The church was about... just about 40 years old when I got here, a long history of social activism and a long history of real active involvement in issues. They had most recently come through a difficult period in which a previous clergy person was had to be fired, and so
mm-hmm.
there was some conflict mediation work that was done and a lot of intensive healing work on the part of the church, which I know was painful, but it was also part of what attracted me, but when I realized that they had done that hard work, I was encouraged that bode well for the future.
Yeah.
And I think it's, in terms of it, the, kind of the issues of inclusion, one of the ways that got kind of wrapped into this, the church became officially open and affirming in 1993. And my sense of things, listening to how that happened, is that the style of the previous pastor complicated some of that process. I don't think there was ever huge issue with the desire to explore what open and affirming meant, or to explore what inclusion in a public, articulate way would mean. And for a church in the UCC to be technically open and affirming, they have to, in some public way, name sexual orientation as a, say this in a positive way, that folks are welcome regardless of sexual orientation, and that those words have to be there. You can't just say everybody's welcome. You can't just say
mm-hmm.
we're open to all. And I don't think that in and of itself was probably a huge hurdle for the bulk of the congregation.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that from what I can gather, some of the process for conversation and discussion and eventually leading up to a vote might have been a little heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some effort to be an early adopter on the part of the pastor, and the pride that comes with that. And so, and that kind of heavy-handedness was a trait that showed up in a bunch of different areas,
mm-hmm.
And a desire to move the congregation into certain areas of involvement, maybe a little sooner than they were ready. I saw that in several areas of the church's life, but in particular the inclusion one. But early on, I think as that vote was being taken or that process was underway, some straight folks actually in the church said, we should create a fellowship group. And they called it SAFE, Spiritually Affirming Friends Everywhere. That was from the beginning designed to be LGBT folks and straight allies who would come together on a monthly basis just to be together and to be supportive. And I think for a number of years, it was one of the largest and most committed groups within the church. Certainly when I arrived, it was very active. Sometimes they just had potluck suppers together and fairly informal conversations. Sometimes they had programs. Sometimes they sponsored programs for the wider church. I remember early on in my time here, the SAFE group hosted two sessions inviting a Presbyterian pastor who had done a lot of biblical work to talk about Old Testament homosexuality, New Testament homosexuality, periodically, not every year, but every other year or so would lead a worship service. That a lot of it was, the efforts were organized around creating venues for gay and lesbian folks to tell their story, which I think has always been the most effective way of helping folks move into a new way of understanding, is to hear stories of people they know and love. So that this is about people, and it's not just an issue that needs to be talked about. Maybe I'll stop there and see if you have any questions.
Yeah. So that community that was created, it still stands today. Am I correct? Is that group
yes,
still
it
runs?
It continues to, and it's evolved. Many of the straight folks that were part of it, frankly, have aged or died. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing, when I came.
When did you come?
I came in 99. I think one of the strengths of the SAFE group was that the straight folks who were there were among the most respected kind of original pillar types of the church.
Yeah.
So people like Dean and Edith Arney, John and Margaret McClung, Ellen Fluck, Steve and Marcia Sheets, who are still a part of it. There was a real sense of validation that for the gay and lesbian folks that this was really part of the church, because these were folks who didn't have to be there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, nobody had to be there, but they there was some, some of them had lesbian children or, there was some reason, but on the other hand, they just believed in this so much and wanted to support from an early point on the inclusion of people that they had come to know and love. And I watched over the years as how the LGBT folks, how their sense of welcome was really rooted in that sense of validation from a pretty core constituency of the church. Mm-hmm. And that has evolved now in that that group meets a little less often and sometimes struggles a little bit for its purpose. And one of the reasons is most of the LGBT folks in the congregation are so fully integrated
right.
into the life of the church that, and so fully affirmed as human beings, because they teach Sunday school, because they mentor confirmation kids, because they go on mission trips, because they are just good moms and dads or whatever, that the sense of needing a group that is sort of a refuge in the storm, it just doesn't have the same, there isn't the same need for it. And so they've kind of struggled a little bit to know what's the, what is our purpose. Sure. But it, I've seen it as a result of overall a really good thing, and but I don't know what the new purpose then for the group is.
Maybe we need to find purpose.
There may be a role in continuing education. There may be roles in continuing to identify, as they did a few years ago, identify emerging issues. So the whole transgender question really has been pushed by SAFE to make sure we're thoughtful about that. I should also say that another kind of track of this whole inclusion question occurred in 2000. An associate pastor was called who came and indicated as she was coming that she was in a relationship with a woman, which she was, and we met her, and they were together for a while, and then they split up after a few years, and sometime after that, this pastor, first to me, but then to the church, revealed that in fact she was bisexual, and had always known that, and had never identified herself as lesbian, although people made assumptions that because she was in a relationship with a woman, she was lesbian, and so that was a surprise. And it was a bit of a struggle for some, quite honestly, more for the lesbian and gay folks than the straight folks. And then subsequently, a year or so later, she got married to a man. All of that happened while she was a pastor here. She handled her communication around all of that with great integrity. But it raised lots of fascinating questions and had lots of points where there could have been real struggle. And I was quite amazed at how gracefully the congregation journeyed with that process and with her life. And I think she is as well. I realized at the end of her 6 years here that I was a little bit exhausted from trying to be a buffer between the constant, the series of revelations that she was sharing. And again, she did it with a great integrity, but I think I worried that maybe there, I didn't worry that we would have ripple effects or negative impact when we called her in the first place. I think I worried a bit when she came out as bisexual, and that seemed to go fine. And then I think I worried when she was getting married. And in fact, you know, life wasn't perfect, but the congregation was really quite graceful. And I came away with that thinking, if we can go through that, those series of transitions and kind of public revelations from a pastor, we're probably going to be able to do just about anything.
It's an amazing congregation.
So, and one of the things that somebody said to me once that I've repeated many times, a friend who is straight, said, in all honesty, he said, I don't get what it is like for a man to be attracted to a man or a woman to fall in love with a woman. And so when I embrace open and affirming, it's not because I get it. It's because I figure as a Christian community, we should welcome folks who are trying to live with integrity, and I don't need to understand all that goes on in their lives. So for me to receive the news that somebody is bisexual is not a big leap, because I didn't get same-sex attractions, so the ability to, or the experience of being attracted to folks of both genders, I don't get that either.
Right.
But I haven't been basing my sense of affirmation on what I understand. Right. And that's been very instructive for me that at some point, and I think the congregation, well, I've said to many people who've gone through divorces of both same-gendered and opposite-gendered, when they're struggling whether or not they think it can stay here in the church. Mm-hmm. And I've said, you know, I think the congregation understands life's complicated. We all do the best we can. We don't need to understand the details of why people split up. We just want, you know, we want the best for everybody.
Right.
And some people, you know, have inside information and they are more involved, and others are just trying to, you know, they watch these things a little bit from a distance and they see partners come and go, or they see families change. And I think that's a really significant quality, that it's, that affirmation is not rooted in making little decisions about, or little judgments about every decision somebody makes. It's just rooted in, we're all children of God, we're doing the best we can, we make mistakes, we have regrets, but we're trying to be as faithful as we can.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that I think is a quality of a long-term community that I don't think communities can exist of any kind for a long period of time unless there's a little bit of grace in recognizing if I pass judgment on every decision everybody makes, we're not getting very far.
Right.
Or if people are passing judgment on me on every decision I make, I'm not going to be interested in sticking around.
Right.
And I think that quality of overall kind of the suspension of judgment and the willingness to accept people where they are, I think that quality goes back to the beginning of the church in the 50s,
mm-hmm.
even though it wasn't called inclusion or it wasn't called open and affirming.
Mm-hmm.
I think the open and affirming language has given focus to a spirit that was already there.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible. As being a member of the church, obviously, a new member at that, have never felt more sense of community. And it has nothing to do with other LGBT people here. It's everybody. It's the wealth of children that we have in this church. It's the new couples that you see get married, now there's little babies being born, and it just seems so alive. That's what drew us here, is because this community just seems to breathe more. I don't know, that's how we describe it anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody kind of just ebbs and flows together, and, you know, you do what you can do, and, you know, which is just something that I think a lot of people don't understand a church can be. And that it's, you know, it's about the community as much as it is learning about God and learning how we should walk through this world and what's right and what's wrong, but helping each other and loving one another I don't believe is wrong. I think that's, you know, the more you accept, like you said, each other for who they are without passing judgment, the better off we all are.
If you were to ask, if you were to do a survey of people of what it is that they value here, community would be the top thing. And I think, you know, caring about issues of social justice would be right up there, but it's very clear that that's the highest priority. And I think one of the things that's been fascinating for me to watch is that even though we are a church that's open and affirming, I think what keeps people here, regardless of their family constellation, is they want to be in community with people at a level that is about who they are as people, not about, I mean, certainly there are people who come hoping to be accepted as
right.
something other than quote unquote normal, and that sometimes that's sexual orientation, sometimes that's other things.
Mm-hmm.
But what keeps them here is when they recognize they want to be in a community where folks are accepted for who they are and not labeled. So one lesbian couple tells the story of how meaningful it was when they first started coming and they started helping out with Interfaith Hospitality Network. The way they were received was there were several identifiers that people who welcomed them used before the identifier of who their partner was used. So it was, you know, you work in the garden, right? Or you are the teacher, or they realized that they were not being screened as, oh my, in either a negative or a positive way, like, wow, we got a lesbian couple, that's not good. Or, oh my gosh, we got a lesbian couple, let's just jump all over them because they're lesbian. They were welcome because they were people. And I think they prefer to be known for other things besides one of the lesbian couples.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Do we do anything with youth in our church for the LGBT wise? Have we ever? I mean, obviously, if somebody comes to you, I'm sure that you know.
Yeah, I think there's some formal and informal things. Formally, we have a sexuality program for middle school kids, and a big piece of that is walking through different expressions of sexuality, and so that there, and that's just rooted in, that program is rooted in respecting youth and their ability to make decisions and make choices and to try and help ground that in certain values, and one of the values is that of inclusion. Informally, ever since I've been here, and this probably predates me, but I can speak from my experience, there's always been at least one kid in the high school, middle high school program, who identified themselves as something other than straight. And I have come to believe that we probably do not know the impact we're having as a welcoming community on a kid's formation. And I say that because I've, in sort of a brokenhearted way, have listened to folks who've come here or who I've just met in life who had a religious community that was very judgmental. Mm-hmm. And I'm quite convinced that in many cases, that judgment is going to take a lifetime to undo. And so I'm hopeful that our welcome and affirmation, conversely, will help a young adult survive a lifetime of efforts to undo that affirmation, or if that were to come in life. So some of those have been folks who identified as lesbian or gay, some kids who were really questioning, some bisexual, some transgendered. And, you know, those kids are like any kids, their lives are not perfect, and they have to go through the growing up process. But and then there's even a young adult who's in his early 20s now, who I just saw a couple weeks ago, who has moved consciously and intentionally away from the Christian faith. But I know that this community and its acceptance of him, his peers as well as his, you know, the kind of larger community of adults, I know that that is quite foundational and formational to him. And it's a gift, I think, we've given his life and the world. And I think we probably underestimate how important it is. And what we probably don't even recognize is how simply and casually we talk with language of affirmation in this community in ways that are different from the high school, are different from people's families, are different from the wider culture. And as a parent, I'm quite grateful that our kids grew up in an environment, religiously and otherwise, that simply saw the diversity of how people fall in love and saw that as part of life.
Mm-hmm.
We've watched an evolution from, and we noticed this in the most recent new member class, I've heard for a while that people came here because they wanted affirmation acceptance for themselves as LGBT. And for a while we've known that there are a lot of families who come not because they have LGBT kids or they themselves are, but because they want their kids to grow up in an environment that is welcoming.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, a welcoming community. And now we're starting to hear young parents say, I don't know what orientation my own child is going to grow up with, but I want to be certain that if they are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, that they have a community that has affirmed them throughout their life. And so, young parents of infants who say that with absolutely no sense of worry or trepidation that their child would be LGBT, but with a deep desire that the faith community be one that welcomes that. And
that's incredible.
That's quite an evolution, both in the way adults think. I mean, I think it reflects social or societal evolution, mm-hmm. that most, you know, a larger percentage of people having babies today are quite comfortable with, at least comfortable with their kids being lesbian or gay.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just had a conversation with another young adult on Sunday who is 23, doesn't choose to identify himself as either gender, grew up part of his life in this church, and struggled to help him see how his kind of natural understanding of the world as a place that is basically accepting of him, how different an experience that is from LGBT folks who are my age or older,
mm-hmm.
who did not have any doubt about the lack of welcome or the judgment that was a part of, especially somebody who, I mean, he's outside the, he's even pushing the edges of LGBT,
mm-hmm.
and gender identity in general, and he's pretty savvy about, you know, he knows where he can wear a dress and where he can't,
mm-hmm.
but he said, one of his comments was, I just wish adults would grow up. And I love the kind of passionate, you know, sort of what's wrong with you people attitude of a young adult,
yeah.
and yet tried to suggest that the environment was quite different, and you can't understand their environment and they can't actually understand yours really either.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought that would be a place of really fascinating exploration for the church, because when I sit at safe meetings or other places with LGBT folks who I'm 53, so who are, you know, 50 and older, I'm keenly aware that so much of the coming out process was included so much pain,
mm-hmm.
and when I am with young adult LGBT folks, especially folks in the church, it's not part of that's not part of the story. And I'm not naive. I know it's quite horrible in a lot of settings still, but
mm-hmm.
Haven't figured out how to have that generational conversation, but that to me would be a fascinating
one.
Because the kind of basic way you stand in the world is shaped by how we are welcomed or not as young people, mm-hmm. you know, growing up.
Right. Do we, does the church do any activism around LGBT stuff?
We,
as a whole, you know.
For a number of years, we we had a pretty active contingent in the Pride Parade. When the marriage amendment ballot was voted on, I think that was in 07, so that's been a few years now, we had an enormous contingent of folks who did a lot of work on that, making phone calls, knocking on doors, writing letters. So those have been two of the, and then there are a number of folks like some of them that you've interviewed, Bonnie and Allie, who in other settings are quite activist in terms of bringing education and bringing awareness. And I think all of them have felt pretty deeply supported by folks in the church. Bonnie's been used a lot to help, you know, just help people understand various issues, and she's been a great resource at non-anxiously going to settings where folks were quite resistant. And I think Allie had some, you know, faced some challenges and was open about that, and I think folks embraced her and have just loved, those who are close to her have loved watching her blossom into a real activist that she has become as a college student.
Yeah, she's incredible.
Yeah.
I think she's going to have a bright future.
Yeah, yeah.
I really do. Is there anything about the church or anything that you want to discuss that's going on? Or?
You know, the one issue that... two other issues that we've talked about, one we made resolution, one we didn't. About 10 years ago, the Boy Scouts of America got really proactive about their anti-gay stance.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like we had, at the time, we had three or four Cub Scout groups meeting here. They may have all been under one troop umbrella. Mm-hmm. Maybe there were two. And so we, through a variety of congregational conversations, we ended up deciding to de-sponsor them. We allowed them to meet in our building, but we would not be the sponsor. And so a neighborhood group took over the sponsorship, really saying, if we are trying to welcome everybody in this building, if people in our congregation couldn't be leaders.
Right.
That didn't make sense. And that was hard because there were a great number of people in this church who were Boy Scouts,
yeah.
Some of whom were leaders. And the particular leaders in the local troop were not in line with the national Boy Scout opinion, but we just felt like we couldn't, you know, it was kind of a basic policy we needed to address.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one that came up a couple of times, and really at my initiative, was the whole question of whether we should stop signing marriage licenses as pastors.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we act as agents of the state, so if somebody has a legal marriage, we can do the same thing a judge can do, which is sign the marriage license. And for a few months, a couple years ago, we just had some general conversation around the church about whether we might stop signing marriage licenses, and that it other things started to emerge in the life of the church, and so it just got off the radar screen. And also there's an interesting line of on the one hand I represent the church, on the other hand I'm one of the ways UCC pastors are affirmed is that in this case, I could marry whoever I wanted to marry.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of institutional and personal lines were a little confusing, but it came up in a conversation I was with just in the last week about whether it was time to revisit that question, and I think that's an interesting one. I have, I don't do a ton of weddings, but regular weddings or same-sex weddings either,
mm-hmm.
but the ones I do, especially the straight ones, I typically will include when I send them the service after we're done, and in my communication with them just indicate my hope that they would advocate for the ability for everybody to marry whoever they'd like, and for that to be legally recognized. But, you know, so there are little things, little ways of being active that are still there. We haven't resolved completely.
Do you think that will ever be, I mean, do you think that'll be resolved in Wisconsin anytime soon? I understand with Tuesday's vote, it probably gets a little harder to decide that, but.
I believe that some of those little babies being born that are being baptized here will be able to legally marry some of the same gender in any state. But, so I kind of feel like it may come from a national, you know, I don't know what Supreme Court's going to do, but I think the some of the legal challenges are coming at a much higher level. And I think the voting public is going to be increasingly, even though these votes still pass, the basic voting public is increasingly either not interested in gay marriage or very supportive of it. And actually the night before Obama verbally embraced gay marriage, watching a news program in which they, because Biden had already, you know, kind of brought the issue to the fore, their prediction that time, at that point, was this would be the last presidential election in which at least one, if not both, candidates would be openly in favor of gay marriage. And I wouldn't be surprised if the next time around that even the Republican, if not in favor of it, would not be harping on it. So that gives that gives me hope. I believe the general trend is in the right direction, even though somebody once described, I remember using this quote, after the gay marriage ballot failed here, or it passed to limit marriage to man and woman, a pastor in Minneapolis talked about this anti-gay marriage sentiment as sort of the flailing tail of a dying dinosaur. So it's going to do damage, for sure, but the dinosaur is dying. And to remember that. And that was, for me, it was a helpful image, which I've tried to hold on to. And I do believe that, actually. And I try to remember that it may be easier for me to believe that, because my life is not constantly challenged. But just looking around, I do think the dinosaur is dying.
I like that.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, on that, thank you very much, Winton. It is June 12th, 2012.